Welcome to Prevent Unwanted and Embarrassing Leakage with Azure Information Protection. That's about as good as the jokes are going to get, everybody. So strap yourselves in for the next hour or so. My name's Andrew McMurray, or Macca if you prefer. I'm a program manager on the Azure Information Protection team. And basically my role is to help customers that have purchased Azure Information Protection, previously known as Azure RMS Premium, or EMS if you've bought the suite and haven't deployed it, to get it deployed and running in your organisation. And we've done quite a bit of change to the Azure RMS product over the last few months. And we recently GA'd Azure Information Protection, which has some new functionality embedded into it from the Secure Islands acquisition that we did in November 2015. You can reach out to me on Twitter if you like, at Macca Oz. You can also follow at the RMS guy, which is Dan Plastina's handle, who is the director in charge of the Cloud and Enterprise Information Protection team, and he tweets quite a lot about new things that are going on within the team. And we also have a mailbox that we all monitor if you've got any questions around Azure Information Protection or the Azure RMS section of the service at askipteam@microsoft.com. If you're looking for me on World of Warcraft, you can also find me on Kazgaroth as a panda and hunter, currently at level 108 because I'm slow, and I am on the Horde side, so I hope that the Horde posse is here today. No? Right. Thank you. One person who doesn't play. Excellent. All right. So we're doing very well there. All righty. So a couple of setup slides which you might have already seen if this isn't your first Enterprise Mobility and Security session, or you'll see plenty of if you go to more after this. We're part of the Enterprise Mobility Plus Security product now, which includes Azure Active Directory Premium, Microsoft Intune, Advanced Threat Analytics, Cloud Application Security, and of course Azure Information Protection to really help our customers with not only the mobility side, but also the security side of their business as well. And it's a big suite. There's a lot to it. It's complex, and there's a lot that goes on in here. There's lots of products in there, and they're starting to talk to each other. Everything from identity-driven security with Azure Active Directory, all the way down to what we do at the data layer, managing the mobile devices, managing what users are doing with SaaS applications and so on, and then detecting threats on premises with your domain controllers. And we kind of, in Azure Information Protection, kind of sit in the middle of all that, and we're integrating with everything around here. And so today, I want to take you through what it means for Azure Information Protection, how we fit into that and what our history looks like, and where we're going from here. All right, so question for everybody. We've got three levels of protection here, and I want you to raise your hand with the one that applies to you. Well, actually, let's just start thinking about how much control do we think we have? How much control do you think you have over information within your business or the customers that you work on? So who feels okay about it? Who feels okay about how much control they've got over their data? Well, we can do better than this, surely. One person in the room feels okay about it. All right. Who feels pretty good? You've got a good level of understanding of who's doing what and where that information is. Come on, raise your hands. I've got a few, so, right, so we're getting this, it's this early morning thing. All right. You're all thankful that I didn't do audience participation and do the good morning thing and then the obvious thing where I ask you to do it again in a louder voice. We're not going to do that. All right, who feels very good that they've got an awesome handle on what's going on, you know exactly where your data is and who's accessing it and where in the world they're accessing it from? Right, nobody. Good. One person still. Good. All right. Right. Now, this person here is clearly making a case for being employed. Right, so everybody just keep an eye out there. All right, well, who's feeling exceptional? So when I mean exceptional, who can respond when something goes wrong and you can get the data back? Right, no one. Cool. That's good. That's what we're hoping to hear. So this is going to help you. All right, so let's start. So hopefully you feel pretty good about your traditional IT on-premises environment. And on-premises is generally fairly green, or different shades of green for different customers, depending on how good you feel about that. And to be honest, based on the poll we just took, that's probably not particularly dark green right now. And when we're thinking about the perimeter protection and the on-premises protection, we're thinking things like border gateway control, you've got firewalls, you've got email gateways, you might have proxies that are doing content inspection and stuff like that. But over the last few years, we've seen the mobile devices come in, and this is what I like to call the lightly managed environment. So it's iOS, it's Android, it's Windows tablets, and so on. you've hopefully got Intune doing some mobile device management or AirWatch or whatever it is that you use. And you can at least enforce some levels of security on that. You know, I want a PIN code, I want encryption, I want to put MAM around the outside of the apps on the device. In the event something goes wrong and the device gets lost, you can disable that device remotely, send a remote wipe to it, etc. And then you've got this, the nice grey box around the outside. So this is what you don't know. This is files on OneDrive Consumer, Dropbox, Box, USB drives, emails being sent outside the org, and you don't know what's going on. Information, Azure Information Protection lives inside this grey box. This is what's hard, and we can make it easier for you. Data is everywhere, everywhere. It's on premises on PCs, it's on phones, it's in the cloud, it's stored everywhere. And the question is, how do you live in that world when you don't know what's going on and be able to adhere to regulatory compliance, to adhere to business requirements, to protect information, particularly if you're dealing with not only your own IP, but also your staff information? You know, you've presumably got an ID of some description. You've got bank accounts so that you can get paid. And how does your business protect that information that's yours, irrespective of how you're protecting the information that's the business as well? And if you're dealing with customer data, how do you protect that? So in the event of a breach, you can do something about it. You can say, you know, the bad guys don't have our data because it's protected. Even if they have the files, they can't open them. How do you get to that state in the first place? So thinking a little bit about the evolution of information protection. Who's used rights management in the past, either AD rights management or Azure RMS? A big show of hands. Beautiful. All right, so we've got a few there. And for those of you that put your hands up, you'd know this aspect of it pretty well. This is where we can encrypt documents, where we can apply use rights, require authentication for the user account. This is where there's a policy enforcement to define what's going on. And we've lived in this world since Server 2003 with AD rights management. We updated AD rights management in 2008. We refreshed it in 2012 and again in 2012 R2. And of course, AD rights management is still there in Server 2016. And this is our on-premises traditional protection of information without the cloud model. So what did we do? We brought Azure RMS to market, which allowed us to get to a cloud model where you could much more easily turn it on. There was no hard deployment. And if you've been through AD RMS before, you understand what hard deployment is. You didn't have to do certificates, you didn't have to do keys with Azure RMS, it just worked. We were able to bring in mobile devices around iOS and Android and put apps on all those different devices so you could share in a much easier way. We think we did a really good job on that. And then as part of Azure Rights Management, we brought in the ability to be able to monitor and respond via the tracking portal. The ability to check a box when you share a document externally and say, I'd like to be able to revoke this in the event that something goes bad. Then when the document goes out, the user has to authenticate to open it. If something goes wrong and you see the picture on the map to show you something has happened, you can go in there, you can revoke access to the document, and then no one can open it anymore. And that's what we gave you with the tracking portal as part of Azure RMS. So, the final piece of the puzzle. We're now generally available with Azure Information Protection, and this allows us to pull the whole story together with classification and labelling on top of that as well. And this is part of the Secure Islands acquisition that took place back in November 2015, which allows us to apply metadata to documents to allow the user to identify the type of information that they're working with. Not going through six clicks within Office to get to the rights management template, which is a very IT-driven thing. File, info, protect, I've got a list of templates, I don't know which one to pick. It's not a good experience for users to protect their information. So with classification and labelling, it allows us to do two things. Firstly, it gives us a nice, easy interface for the user to use, and then it guides the user to help them identify the type of information they're working with. Is it internal only? Is it part of a project I'm working on? Is it external and public ready? And whatever the words you want to use, it puts them in the language that your users are used to. It also brings a rules and a policy engine with it, so you can set rules and regulations by which that information is going to be classified or protected, which means you can protect content. If I detect a credit card, I'm automatically going to take an action. If I detect a particular set of words, I'm going to make the user protect it. And I'm going to take you through what those particular capabilities look like and how you can configure them and what they look like ultimately in the product itself. So no more of this going to the backstage view, playing around with six clicks to work out what the protection should be. We use the classification and the label to automatically apply the protection when that's necessary to do the tracking, and then of course we can respond later on through the portal. So when you bring all that together, then we have the full data life cycle from document creation or email creation, all the way through to what we want to do with it and then ongoing modification as well, so that as the data changes, we can take additional actions. Just because a document was classified as internal only at one point in time, that doesn't mean that it's always going to be internal only. Take financial results, for example. Incredibly secret, incredibly locked down to a very small number of people until 4:59 p.m. And then at 5 p.m. when the market closes, it goes public. So it goes from six people inside the company that know the information to the entire world. Well, how do you manage that? And how do you change that? So what I want to do now is take you through a more real world kind of view. I could talk about this ad nauseum in slides about, you know, what you can do, but I'd like to take you through it more with a how can you get started kind of session, starting with classification, explaining what that is, and then going through four more add-on scenarios: automation, protection, at which point I'll stop and do some demos, and then we'll talk about reporting and collaboration after that. And these are the kind of key scenarios that you're now able to do with Azure Information Protection. So I'll start with classification. What is it? It's basically the label, the ability to label. And a label is a piece of metadata that travels with the document and allows you to put a tag on it. So to identify it by what it is. All of the labels you're going to see today are just demo ones that we provide, a default set. And you can change these. You can edit everything that I'm going to show you. The colours you see, the words you see, the descriptions, the tooltips, the visual markings. Everything you see is editable. And we provide you with a set to get you going so you can play quickly and also give you some guidance around what works. But as we work with a lot of customers, we've worked with Secure Islands previously, as well as with the preview customers that have been running it for the last few months. And what I can say is that most customers have a different set of labels from what we ship as the examples in Azure Information Protection. You know, I'm yet to see any two customers that have exactly the same set of labels. Depending, of course, on whether you're using some kind of regulatory compliance framework, we might start to see those double up, particularly in Australia, where the Australian Signals Directorate standards for information security are starting to filter down into certain states and become a standard method of classifying and labelling data. So part of what we can help you with are the what are the labels you should use, because that's the hard bit. And this is a technology that is extremely easy to deploy and use, but it takes a lot of work to get the business on board as to what are the rules, what are the policies, what are the words you want to use. You know, is it just for everyone? Is it for finance? Is it for HR? Do you want to do everything at once? Do you want to just do classification and labelling first, bring it into protection later on, and so on? So we apply these labels, which allows us then to know the type of information that I'm dealing with. In this case on the screen, there's the public, internal, restricted, confidential, and then off to the side, it's personal. And you want to think about this. If you allow your users to store personal information on your work machine, you probably want them to be able to say, ignore this, this is mine. Because if you start to apply rules and regulations to the data, then that doesn't work so well. Maybe you come across a spreadsheet that has budget information in it, not a work budget, it's a person's personal budget. It just happens to be sitting on their OneDrive for Business. What do you want to do about that? You know, I don't know what the answer to that is. That's a question for you. You could take control of that. You could say, well, you've put it on a work machine, so we're done. It's mine. You could also allow them to override any rules that you've got and say, no, that's mine. Ignore it and just park it over there somewhere. We can do rules. The users can complement this in terms of overriding it, in terms of doing it manually. And also we can do things like visual markings and so on. Headers, footers, watermarks, and I'm going to show you all of that in action as well. So I'm going to go through sort of your main user experiences. And the first one is automatic. So this is where we do content detection. This is where you set a rule that says, I want to detect this type of stuff. It can be a word, it can be a phrase, it can be associated with a DLP style engine, which could be, you know, a discovery of a credit card or a government ID or whatever you're looking for in the event that we don't already build it in for you. You can use a regular expression, you can paste that in, you can do whatever you want to try and find those things that you automatically want to classify. So you're basically allowed to create a set of rules that say, if I find this, then I want to do that. And that then is over to you. You might want to apply encryption to protect the document. You might just want to label it. You might want to put a visual marker on it. You might want to prompt the user, or you might just want to take control and do it automatically. So that's automatic stuff. And then there's recommended. Recommended is exactly that, but it only prompts the user. Same set of rules as automatic, same set of information, but instead of just taking action and applying the label, it says to the user, hey, I think I've found something that meets a policy that the business has set. We recommend that you click this button and set that policy. Now, it's still over to the user at that stage to make that final decision. And as you're starting to think about rolling this out, there's a line in between recommended and automatic that may or may not apply to you, which is, you know, firstly, how much do you trust your users to make the right judgment? Hands up, you trust your users to make the right judgment? Not a single hand goes up, of course. And how sure are you that you're detecting the right stuff? And this is where recommended could be very useful when you're trying to work out those different rules that you're building. Because initially, you may think you've got this nailed, and then you start getting false positives, which get automatically classified. So at first, there's a real good idea there to start thinking about doing recommendations rather than forcing things down until you know you've got everything right. And somewhere in all of this stuff is your right answer. You know, we can help you work through that, but only you can answer that. And we give you the ability to just go ahead and do it or prompt the user with what you find. We can do justification when users change things. So if you detect something should be confidential because it meets a rule, and the user says, no, 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 I want to change it to something else, then you can prompt the user to say why. And the key thing here is that you're making the user make a deliberate choice. It's no longer, oh, sorry, I didn't know. No, no, you did know because you clicked the button and you typed the reason why you did it. So you're at least catching and logging and knowing that the user knows because they are actually deliberately setting that down and deliberately saying why they did it. Now, if the user's doing this for genuine business reasons and they've declassified a document wrongly, well, there shouldn't be any problem with that, and that's fine because they've put in their justification, they've made a mistake, no problems. We do a little bit of user education, put it back the way it was. Yeah, I'm reclassifying this, doesn't meet the requirements, we're good, that type of stuff. But if someone is doing something that they shouldn't have, then they're probably going to want to realise that they're being watched and that they shouldn't be doing it. And that's where the justification thing really comes in, because it makes the user think about whether or not they really want to reclassify that confidential document to public, because it's in their face, they're being forced to explain themselves, and now they're thinking, right, who else is watching me? And what's potentially going to happen to me if I go and make this change? And last but not least, there's manual, and that's exactly what it sounds like. The user just clicks a button and says, I'm going to manually identify what this is, and we're done. Alrighty, so what are labels? The labels are just metadata on documents, very literally. Word, Excel, email, that kind of thing. It's a custom field that shows up on the document, and you can see them, you can view them. When you click on a button, they turn up with a bunch of information about who did it and when they did it, and I'll show you what that looks like in the demo. But basically, they're just pieces of information that travel with the document. What that means is they're in clear text, and other DLP systems and other applications can read that metadata. So if you have, insert your DLP engine rule here, and they can read metadata on documents, and I'm yet to see one that can't, it means that they can read that and they can take an action. And one of the demos I'm going to show you is when someone takes an internal document and then tries to send it to an external recipient. Your gateway control should see that and then stop the email. Why should that get out if it's already been classified as internal? You've got a document that's very much only for internal people being sent to an external address. No way, we're done, we're not doing that. So your DLP engines, your border gateway controls and so on can do that, and it travels with the document. It doesn't matter if you save it on your local PC and then upload it to SharePoint or send it in an email or put it on a USB key. The label goes with the document and so does the protection if you applied it. All right, so let's talk about protection. And this is for the people in the room who haven't used rights management in the past mainly. So if you have used rights management in the past, this is your opportunity to catch up with a bit of shut-eye after last night. Big night, anyone? No? Excellent. All right. Well, we'll move on anyway. All right, so what exactly is protection? It's the encryption of the document. We wrap the document and we apply a use rights policy to it. We can turn off things like the ability to edit, to copy, to paste, not just between applications, but also inside the document itself. So I open a protected Word document, and I may only be able to view it. I can't change the document. I can't screen copy it. I can't paste it. I'm limited by what the operating system allows because we're integrated with Windows. We can stop screenshotting on Windows. We can stop it showing up in a Skype for Business session. We can't do much about an iPhone or an Android device because there's no way to stop that functionality. But we're able to do as much as we can do on those platforms and as much as we can do on the Windows platform as well. But the key thing here is to protect the data that needs protection. With rights management, there was a one-size-fits-all approach, which was everything gets protected. If you turn it on, and whatever you want to do, you want to protect it. With classification and labelling, you might just need to label a document to identify what it is, and you may not need to protect it. Protection is for the crown jewels. Protection is when you want to restrict who can open it and what they can do with it. If that doesn't apply, you don't need to protect the document. But classifying and labelling the document is important because there are other systems that may need to do something to that document based on that classification and label. And so part of the analysis to do when you're thinking about deploying a solution like this is to identify what needs to be protected. What is the information that matters to the business? The intellectual property, the schema diagrams, secret formulas, whatever the case may be. Customer information, whatever, is to your business, you know, customer information, whatever, is to your business going to be bad if someone who shouldn't have it gets a hold of it? Whatever that might be, that's what you want to protect. So the way this is done is you take your piece of information, something you care about, we take a key, we put a license inside it that requires the authentication, we encrypt the document, and then there's a wrapper around the outside. If you send me a protected document and I double click on it, first thing that happens is that I have to authenticate and say, is the person who sent the document the person that should open it? If I can authenticate it, I can open it, and then the question is, what am I allowed to do with it? And we pull all of that information about what we can actually do with it, the use rights, etc., from the Azure Information Protection Service itself. Now, this all gets done locally on the machine, right? And this is really important to understand. This is not a you upload it to the cloud, we process it and send it back model. We don't take any of the document contents into the service whatsoever. This is everything done locally on the device, no matter what that is. And so the apps are used to protect and enforce the use rights. There's an SDK, there's an API, there are partners that have built additional products, such as Secure, who wrap around the outside of SAP, and Foxit and so on, who use our SDK and API to embed this functionality inside your applications. And so there's an ecosystem there. If you have an internal line of business app and you want to be able to classify, label and protect, then we're going to provide you with an API to plug that in and to be able to do the same things that we can. We never see the content. Now, I just want to say that one more time. Stand straight at the camera. We never see the content. This is a common question that comes up when you protect the document. We never see that. We give the client a key and the ability to protect it, but we never see the content. So just to answer that question proactively, because it always comes up. All right, so what we might do is do a bit of demo and have a look at how this actually looks. So I'll just jump across to my demo machine. Is it me? That's the question. Awesome. Well, thankfully, I wasn't here to do a Windows Hello demo. Right. Just log in. Okay. Can't sign in with Windows Hello. No, I can't. And I can tell you why I can't sign in with Windows Hello, because I've got bloody great lights staring straight into my face, and it's affecting the infrared camera. All right, so what you can see here is my Azure portal. And the Azure portal is where we do the administration for the Azure Information Console. Jesus Christ, Oren. Yeah, I forgot to turn the notifications off. Never mind. All right. So what I've got here is my Azure portal. Basically, all of your administration for the Azure Information Protection policy is done through the Azure portal. Now, in order for me to get to my policy, I'll just go to More Services here, and I'll type Information, and you can see that Azure Information Protection comes straight up like so. And what we can see in the first section that we can see inside the portal is an example of the policy itself. So the policy has a title. The default policy title is Sensitivity. You can call it whatever you like. but pretty much everything that you're writing in here will come through into the Azure Information Protection Client at some point, either as a label, either as a tooltip, as something like that. You can see the tooltip information here to give the user a bit of an idea as to what we're looking at. And then you've got all of the different labels and classifications that are available to you. And you'll notice that in this one, we've got personal, public, internal, confidential. Then we've got some stuff specifically for things like credit card data, so I found a credit card number, social security number being an American demo, and of course secret. And you'll notice that secret has a little triangle next to it. And when we click on that triangle, you can see here that we have the ability to create sub-labels as well. So within secret, there might be different levels of secret. There might be secret information that's available to the entire company. So everyone within the company should be able to look at that, but we don't want that going outside the company. And then there could be secret my group, for example, so restricted to my group individually. And you'll notice for each of these labels, we have a tooltip. We have whether or not we're applying visual marking to the document so that we can make it very obvious to the end user whether or not there's a classification applied. And over here, we can see that we have protection as well. So are we automatically applying an Azure RMS or potentially an AD RMS template to this as well, if we're using a very regulated hold your own key scenario there. As we scroll down, we have a couple of other options here. Firstly, you get the ability to determine whether or not you actually want to force a label to be applied to every document or email that comes under the purview of the policy. You can choose to have this off. So a user can choose not to classify a document at all, if you like. And this might be something you do initially when you're just doing a test of the process to see whether or not it works successfully. And then later on, you might say, right, we're going to force you to apply a label, and we can also set a default label here as well. Can everyone see that all right, or do you need me to zoom in? Everyone seeing that all right? Cool. Default labels, I think, are particularly useful, because if you are going to go down a classification and labeling strategy, it's probably a good idea from this point onwards to start getting those documents and emails labeled. So a default label makes sense, and that default label could be unclassified. You might have a classification called unclassified, for instance, and that might be the default label straight away. And notice down the bottom here, we talked about that justification thing before. You can choose whether or not you actually want a user to justify when they're changing a classification from one of a high level to a lower level. You can toggle that on and off here. That's something to be aware of with the justification stuff. If I ever take a label and make it a higher security clearance or a higher security classification, I don't have to justify that. I only have to justify when I'm stepping down in terms of classification. And what is up, what is down? It's the order of the list here. So personal is least, secret is highest. If I need to move that around, like so, I can choose to move a label up and down the list. I can choose to delete a label. I can add sub-labels, etc., etc. So let's drill into the confidential policy. So you can see that when we open up the confidential label, I should say, or classification, that opens up another blade to give me a bit more information on how this works. First and foremost, enabled or disabled. So you can create as many different classifications as you want in here, and if you don't enable any of them, they don't show up inside the client. So it's quite possible that what you see on the left-hand side of the screen here is completely different to what shows up in the client at the end of the day. You might be playing around with test classifications. You may not want them coming through to the client, but you may not want to delete them at this point either, so you can leave them disabled. We have our label name and our tooltip for how it appears inside the client. And of course, you can choose a number of different colours. And colouring is very important because as we're working with the client itself, the toolbar that appears inside Office and inside Outlook will give the user not just a textual representation of what the label is called, but they also get a coloured representation as well, which works for a lot of people. And you can see there that there's plenty of options available to you. If we're choosing to automatically encrypt the document, we can choose whether or not to pull an RMS template from Azure RMS, or if you're doing what we call the hold your own key scenario, which I'll talk about a little bit further on, you can choose to pull back from an AD RMS installation to choose a template from there. And then, of course, it just becomes a matter of choosing the template you actually want to apply to this particular document that's been classified as this particular level. We can choose whether or not to have headers and footers. And if we are having a header or a footer, we can choose what text to put down the bottom. So this can literally just be some text that you type. Or you'll notice here that I have the ability to use some variable style information in here as well, so that we can automatically populate that with more meaningful information. So in this case, I'm saying sensitivity, confidential, classified by dollar user.principal name to actually bring in the user principal name of the person that classified the document. We've got a whole bunch of documentation on docs.microsoft.com around the different variables that we can use available right now in Azure Information Protection if you're interested. There are plenty more than just user principal name. Now you've got your font size and your color as well, and the alignment, where is that appearing? Is it in the left, the right, or the center of the document? And then of course we've got our watermark. So if we want to have a great big watermark splash diagonally across the entire page, we can have that as well. And awesome opportunities here for all sorts of interesting text that you might be able to put on there. You also can choose the watermark color as well. And as I said, whether it's diagonal or you can go horizontal across the page. And then the next part is really interesting. This is where we can configure our conditions for automatically applying a label. So remember before we said conditions are either automatic, we found something in the document, we know that that corresponds to something we're worried about, therefore we'll automatically classify it with this particular classification. Or we have recommended, where we say, we found it, tell the user we found it, what's the user going to do about it? Well, it's totally up to them at that point. They can click a single button to apply that, or they can ignore it and move on. And then, of course, we have the tooltip there as well. Now, if we go and look at an individual condition, so this one we've got is a confidential auto rule, you can see that there are a couple of types of conditions. The first one is a built-in condition. So if I click on built-in condition, there are a number of built-in conditions that we make available to you, and we will continue to add to these over time. So we can automatically detect credit card numbers, SWIFT codes, not much use to us in New Zealand, social security numbers from the US, IBAN numbers and ARA routing numbers, and if we find them, we can choose how many times we need to find them before we trip the gate to say, go and apply this policy. The custom is just that. I'm matching an exact phrase. I can match as a regular expression if I like. So if you wanted to find an Australian Medicare card number, you could create a regex for that, and you can put that in here and find that as well. You can choose whether or not you're using case sensitivity here and you know, the minimum number of occurrences we need before we trip that policy again. So it's really important that we give you the ability to be able to detect pretty much anything you want. So it's important we're able to support those regexes there as well. And that's pretty much it. So once you have built your policy, you simply hit the publish button up here. Whenever you make a change to a policy, you need to republish it. And then we simply deploy the Azure Information Protection client, which is a simple executable file. You know, repackage it as an MSI, push it out through System Center Configuration Manager or whatever it is that you're doing. And then ultimately the end users can start working with that. It's available for Windows 7, Windows 8.1, Windows 10, works with Office 2010, 2013, 2016. And right now on the roadmap, we're building out all of the other platform capabilities as well. So let's have a look at what it looks like from the end user's perspective. So we've set it all up, and now the end user is going to start working with it. So what I'll do is I'll just open up my copy of Word here. All we've done, this is a bog standard Windows 10 Enterprise build. It's in a work group. It's got Office 365 Pro Plus installed on it, but it works quite happily with the MSI version of Office as well. And we've done an install of the Azure Information Protection client to it. So I'll go and create myself a blank document. So the first thing you'll see is when we install the Azure Information Protection client, we get a little protect button here. And if we click down there and go to help and feedback, you can see straight away who you're logged into Azure Information Protection as well as when you last connected. So essentially what happens when we fire up the Azure Information Protection client, every time we fire up the Azure Information Protection client, it will go off to the service, it will check to see whether there's been a change to the policy. If there's been a change to the policy, it will pull it down and implement it straight away. So you can be confident that whenever you make a change in Azure Information Protection, the next time someone opens an Office product, they will get that new policy arrived down on their machine. Alrighty, so you can see here we have a new toolbar called Sensitivity. And ultimately, that is the name of our policy, as you saw inside the Azure Information Protection console before. As I mouse over that, I get the tooltip. You can see that I have a default policy set for internal here, and I've got the ability to edit my policy if I go and change it. You can see here that we're currently marked as internal, and when I mouse over that again, the tooltip appears for what internal means. So I'm going to type, this is some public info. And as a user, we're not doing any automatic classification at this point. You know, we haven't seen anything here that we need to pick to automatically classify it. I've decided that that's public information, so I want to step this down from internal to public. So what I'll do is I'll hit the public button. And because I'm lowering the security level here, the classification level, it's actually asking me to justify why I'm doing that. I've got two options at present. The previous label no longer applies, or I can type in an actual justification because I wanted to, and hit confirm. And now you can see it takes away the other options on the toolbar. It's now classified. It's there as public. I made a mistake. Oops, I want to change that. No problem. I can just edit that, change it back up again, like so. So nothing really difficult there. Well, what about the automatic stuff? So what I'll do is I'll close that one down. We don't need that anymore. And we'll create a new one. Now, this new one, what I'm going to do is just grab myself some credit card information. Because you'll notice before in the Azure portal, we have a classification labeled credit card data. And in here, we have a condition looking for credit card numbers. And we're using the built-in regular expression for a credit card number. So what I did, and if anyone wants to test this stuff out, PayPal is a really good place to get test credit card numbers. So these are international test credit card numbers, they're not real ones. But if you just do a Bing search on PayPal test credit card, you'll get a whole list of these that you can use. And as I said, they're internationally accepted test credit card numbers. So what I'll do is I'll grab some credit card numbers from here, like so, stick them straight into the document. Now, we do the detection on the save action. So just pasting this in here is not going to trip anything. I've got to actually save the document first. So what I'll do is I'll choose to save that. I'll go to my PC because it's quicker, and I'll call it nothing to see here. Because I'm being sneaky, I don't want anyone to know I put a credit card number in there. I'll save that. Straight away it says, righto, we found a credit card number. We recommend you label that as credit card data. So it wants me, it's prompting me to say, we know there's something here. Go ahead and classify this with the credit card data label. So, yep, no problem, I'll change that now. And straight away, we get our marking applied to us. So the confidential here, et cetera, et cetera. If we were to go into the backstage view, you can see straight away, it's applied an RMS template to it as well. So the benefit here, just reiterating this for those of you that use Azure RMS already, is the user has not had to come to the backstage view, go to protect document, go to restrict access, work out which one they're supposed to apply in the first place, because we've done that for them. All they've had to do in this case is respond to an automated prompt to say there's a credit card number in there, yes, I'll do that, and then I'm done. This could be done automatically, so they don't get a choice, we just go ahead and do it. And if we go and look at the properties of this document now and go to custom, you'll see all of those labels sitting here straight away, which means our DLP engine can go and pick those up later on and do something with them if, for instance, I throw them into SharePoint or I try to send this out via email to somebody else or anything like that. All right. So let's try another one. That was credit card. Let's try full automated stuff. So we'll get rid of that. Oops. And we'll create another new one. And what we're going to do in this one is we're doing a spec for something that that perhaps we're working on in a project. And I've got a policy which you saw before that's looking for the word confidential in a document and just automatically applying the confidential template to that. So I'm typing away. This is very confidential. Happy with that. I'll go and save that now. Just call it my stuff. Save it. And straight away, we've automatically labeled that as confidential. So again, we've picked that up. We found it. And if you have a look down the bottom here, you'll see that the footer that we're using is utilizing that variable data. So it's actually pulled it and said, sensitivity confidential classified by Macca at maccademo.com. So immediately it's grabbed that information and off we go. Pretty cool, right? So what about DLP systems? I have a Office 365 tenant here. I've got a couple of DLP rules set up inside Exchange to catch stuff. So let's have a think about how that might work. So in this case, what I'll do is I'll create another new document. And we'll label that one as internal. And with internal stuff, it's like, you know, it's internal. You shouldn't send it anywhere. I'm not going to encrypt it because it's information that probably won't hurt too much if it gets out, but I don't want it going out anyway, right? But it doesn't justify being encrypted in this case. This is internal stuff. I'll save that. Called stuff two. Click save. Now, again, if we just go back to the backstage view and we go to the properties here and go to advanced properties, you can see that we now have a sensitivity label attached with a value of internal. So what I've done in my Exchange DLP is I've set a rule that says if you see a document come through with a custom property called sensitive that's labelled internal, I want you to stop that going outside the organisation. It can go inside the organisation, I can send it internally, no problem. As soon as I try to send it to someone outside the organisation, I want you to stop it. So we'll close that down and we'll open up Outlook. Should have opened up Outlook before I said started this demo, but never mind. And hopefully we'll get that open fairly quickly. And I'm going to create a new mail. So at the moment I'm logged in as Macca at maccademo.com in my tenant. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to send an email to my real email address at microsoft.com, and I'm going to attach my file, which was stuff two. So this is the one that is labelled as internal. So we'll just double check that, make sure there's no smoke and mirrors happening. So this is internal stuff, sensitivity internal. We all happy with that? Alrighty. So what I'll do is I'll try and send that outside the organisation. Check this out. Yeah, I reckon it's pretty interesting. I want my mate to know about it in that other company. Send. So out we go. And what should happen any minute now is Exchange should catch that in its DLP engine. It should see that we've got a document marked internal, and then it should block that from going out in the first place. So you can see straight away, undeliverable. We've caught the fact that you've got a document labelled as internal in here, and we're not allowing that to go outside the organisation. Right? Pretty good. So what we've done here is we've given you the ability to say, I want to do classification and labelling today. Maybe I don't want to do protection just now, but my DLP engine, because we're storing this stuff as metadata on the file, can do whatever it needs to do outside of whatever it is that we're doing with protection. So let's take another thing. So that's great. Nice. It's a document. But what about an email? I can classify an email as well, as you can see. I have the ability to classify emails. And when I classify an email, that classification shows up in the email header under the term MSIP underscore labels. So I can do the same thing with my DLP engine. What I'm going to do is I'm going to send an email that's marked as internal to Microsoft.com. And when I hit send, the same thing will happen. I've got another DLP rule that's looking in the header of the email to make sure that anything going outside the organisation doesn't have an MSIP label labelled internal. And if it does, block that straight away because you've classified this as internal. It's an internal email. You're trying to send it outside the organisation. I don't want you going there. Again, we should get something similar. So we're able to catch what's happening in the document metadata and what's happening in the metadata of the email as well. So it's pretty good. All right. Okay, so the question is, can you do this with OneDrive and SharePoint? So the OneDrive and SharePoint stuff at the moment, there's a few little nuances to it. You can certainly apply the labels to the information and upload it to SharePoint and OneDrive, and SharePoint and OneDrive can work in with that in the DLP engines as well. However, when you use RMS, Azure RMS encryption on a document, that becomes opaque to SharePoint and OneDrive for Business at this point. And there is some work going on to address that at the moment. But to answer your question, yes, you can utilise those labels. Yeah, we have some documentation on how to do that, so I can pass you that information on later. Alrighty, we are going back to the slides. There we go. So hopefully that gives you a bit of an idea of how this all works. Good. What do you reckon? If I could, I'll just leave questions to the end if that's all right, because I've got a little bit more to get through. And if we do run out of time, I'll be in the hub after that, so you can come and grab me. Alrighty, so let's talk about reporting. So when you share a document, and this is part of Azure Rights Management Premium today, you have the option when you share it to say that you want to be able to track it and you want to be able to revoke it. You go to the document tracking portal, you get to see when someone's opened it, you see where in the world they were to our best approximation, and you can optionally take an email every time someone opens it, and all those kinds of things. And in the event that something goes wrong, you can click the revoke button, and then they can't open that document anymore. So that allows users to be able to see what's going on. We're working on the logs and the reporting for Azure Information Protection. There's going to be more on this in the very near future. A lot more information about how you as administrators and so on can get access to what's going on and get reports and whatnot. There's not a lot to say there, but very shortly we're going to have a lot more. So just keep an eye out on the Azure Information Protection blog for the centralized reporting capability. And then there's collaboration. So when you do the sharing, here's what actually happens. So in the scenario that's on the slide, we've got Sue who wants to share a document, but in two different ways. She wants Bob to be able to view the document and print it, and so that's what she specifies for Bob, which you can see up in the top right-hand corner there. And she wants Jane to be able to edit the document and print it. So basically this one document has the use rights policy that lists out both Bob and Jane and their respective rights, and that goes out to each one. It requires the user to authenticate. We have apps for all the different platforms, iOS, Mac, Android, Windows, and so on, and that allows you to consume that protected document
and apply authentication.
The authentication itself, so we use Azure Active Directory, whether that's a full sync, whether it's a partial sync, only based in the cloud, whether it's an ad hoc sign up anywhere in the world. My mum can go and sign up for a free tenant or a free user. It's very seamless to the user. We have it down to 3 or 4 clicks to be able to share with someone that doesn't have an Office 365 tenant. And basically, she'd rock along, she'd enter her email address, and away we'd go. Admittedly, my mum wouldn't do that anyway, but nevertheless, she could if she wanted to. And that enables us to do authentication against those documents. It can also come back down to on-premises if you're using ADFS or a federated service to require that authentication back on-prem. Doesn't make any difference in that scenario. So don't be afraid around the authentication mechanism. If you've got AAD or you've got ADFS, in order to do the authentication back on-prem, we can handle that either way. All right, so moving on to architectures and the small amount of time we've got left. All righty, so key management. What are you doing around key management? Who looks after the key? We've got a number of different options available for you here. By default, when you set up Azure RMS, we look after the key for you. Azure RMS creates a key for you. It does the key rollover, all that type of stuff. You don't have to deal with it.
We just look after it for you.
But there are some customers that don't want that to happen. They want to basically be in charge of their own key. So we have a number of different ways you can do that. The first way is by using Azure Key Vault. Azure Key Vault software and Azure Key Vault hardware are services that allow you either to provision your own key in Azure Key Vault software or to provision your own key in hardware HSMs in the Azure data centers. And then there's BYOK, bring your own key. Bring your own key is where you generate the key yourself using on-premises HSMs, and then you go ahead and transfer that key into our HSMs in our data centers. We use specifically built Telus HSMs in order to store the keys. We do not have the ability to export the key. We do not have the ability to back up the key. We cannot see the key. You become in charge of that key completely. And then last but not least, in preview right now, which does require Azure Information Protection Premium 2 plan or EMS E5 plan, is the hold your own key scenario. Hold your own key is a split brain type methodology that allows you to use Azure RMS for certain classifications, and then for the highest level, most toxic data that should never leave your organisation, should never be shared anywhere, That's where we can flip back to an AD RMS cluster on premises to secure that document. It is complex. It is not designed for everyone. If you want to do hold your own key, you probably only want to do this because regulatory compliance reasons that are forcing you to use some classifications with an on-premises AD RMS. But for the most part, we don't see many people needing to use this. All right, so a little bit on topology. We've got a requirement for Azure Rights Management, therefore Azure Information Protection as well, to have a minimum of 11 attributes that are synchronized to the cloud. Three of them you should care about, eight of them you shouldn't. The three you should care about are very simple. First name, last name, and email address, and that's it. If you're worried about syncing those three things to the cloud, then I'm guessing you've turned off external email. Because if you send an external email, you get those three pieces of information. So if you're worried about syncing those three pieces of information to Azure AD, I assume you've got no external email at all. And if you have external email and are still worried about syncing those three things, then we should have a pretty interesting conversation. Because it's the same thing, and in fact, it's harder to get the information via the AAD sync than it is from an email. And then there's the other eight attributes, which are machine data kind of stuff that allows us to do the work that we need to do. You can use the RMS connector, which allows you to consume that service back down to on-premises. So if you've got on-premises SharePoint Exchange, file servers with FCI, that kind of thing, you can have your on-prem assets protected by Azure RMS and Azure Information Protection as well. You can use sync against Windows Server Active Directory. Optionally, you can have a federated service such as ADFS. Then you can require those authentication requests to come back down. We've already talked about the data not going back up. Everything's already done, you know, locally on the client. And now there's that variation for highly regulated environments, and this is something new that we've reached within the last couple of months. You saw it with the AD RMS preview button inside the admin console. So I just want to just reiterate again, it is in preview. It's not officially released yet, the hold your own key scenario that we just talked about a moment ago. So there's three key models for the encryption of the documents. There's the I'm just going to let Microsoft take care of it model, which is what we talked about with the Azure RMS option. There's the BYOK option, bring your own key, that we talked about with Key Vault before. And if that's not sufficient, we now have this hold your own key scenario. That is your data center, your HSM device, your key, you've got control. And when you have a button that's configured to use AD RMS, when a user clicks it, it goes back down to Active Directory Rights Management, applies that using your key and your templates. We see nothing, we can't do anything with that. In the event that someone gets your document, it's going to have to come back down and authenticate on-premises and all that kind of thing. So it's for those highly regulated environments where you have to hold your own key. It's very, very appropriate for a limited number of scenarios, but there was a need from some of our highly regulated customers, and if you are one of those, have a chat to us about it because you're going to need some help setting it up. If you just wanted to, this is really mainly in the slide now for your own edification later on when you download it, just a slightly more graphical representation of the hold your own key scenario here as well. Alrighty, so getting started, thinking about how you go from where you are to kicking the tires and getting going. If you have Azure Rights Management already running, then the third option is already there for you and you can layer on some of the other stuff. If you have nothing, well, here's what we basically go through and what our team spends a lot of our time doing. So first up, what are your classification policies? What are the buttons you're going to have? You saw that I had some configured and it showed up for the user. What are the buttons that you want your users to see? That will actually take you quite a bit of time based on our experiences thus far. There's lots of internal debates. There's lots of arguments. Sometimes the CISO can say that's what they are and we're done. Sometimes there's like, well, I want A and they want B and somewhere in the middle is the answer. And that's going to take some time. So what are the buttons you're going to have? What are the rules? What are the policies you're going to apply? I showed you detecting words and phrases and credit cards and so on. What are the things you want to detect, if you want to detect? What are the colours you're going to use? What are the restrictions on what's going to apply? If I click that button, is this protected or is it not protected? Does it apply a policy? How many instances are required of anything we detect? All these kinds of things need to be configured. We give you a set of that to get started, and it's a recommended set of, in the event of no other answer, this is a good answer. It's public, general, protected, restricted, and so on. You've seen that in the demos already. And that'll get you going. For a lot of customers, that's perfectly the right answer. They don't have a data policy today. They don't label anything today. It gets them going, and they're good to go. so we can get you up and running very quickly. Questions around automation. What is it you want to detect? What do you want to do with it? Do you want to protect it? Gaining insights through reporting as we light those things up. What are the pieces of information you want? And if you have reporting needs, we're still finalising the reporting, so we'd very much like to hear about what types of reports you want to see. So after this, if you're hanging around the hub and you've got some thoughts on what you want to see in the reporting and you can find me, you know, let me know. We'll pass this stuff back to the development team and we'll see what we can get done for you. And of course, collaboration. Do you need or want to share protected documents between organisations, whether it's a sister organisation, whether it's a completely different one? A whole bunch of resources for you. And hopefully you've seen some stuff that gets you interested, you've seen some stuff that gets you excited. Hopefully you've seen some stuff that makes you think, you know, that could work quite well in our organisation. If you're already an EMS E3 customer or an Azure Rights Management Premium customer, you already have access to at least the manual classification and labelling capabilities that we showed you already. If you want to know more, got some stuff here. Twitter, the technical documentation. This is really good. Get onto docs.microsoft.com, jump into the Azure Information Protection section. There is a brilliant little quick start guide to get you going, almost like a proof of concept guide. We'll take you right through step by step how to get this set up in your organisation. Very, very easy. One client to deploy, one client only, very small installation, package it into an MSI, good to go. You've got the email there that we watch, and don't forget we have the IT Pro blog, and of course we've got some other things for you there as well. So hopefully you've got something useful out of this session. Please give us an evaluation, tell us what you thought, and hopefully that was a nice easy way to ease into the day. So if you've got any questions, don't be afraid to yell them out. Otherwise, thanks very much for your attendance.